G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Adam White has been an absolute colossus throughout the Melbourne Cup Carnival, and he's back again on a Friday morning on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning. How are you?
Going great.
That's good. I'm going great, too.
It's good news. Good news. Not often do we get that level of enthusiasm from you at 6.06. Normally there's... there's something going on. Sometimes I lost my keys.
Yeah, but there's always some drama, but that's okay. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a negative situation.
Can't be a drama that always at this hour of the morning.
Dramatic situation. But today all went very smoothly.
That's unusual.
Very unusual. Very, very unusual.
Have you worked out that there's a spot for the keys, like just inside the door or something, where you just leave them? Because you haven't lost your keys for a long time now. Has there been a change in the system?
No, not really.
I'm impressed that your key location techniques have improved greatly.
Yeah, but you can leave them wherever you like. That doesn't mean that one of the little munchkins isn't going to take it and move it somewhere else and all that sort of thing. You know what it's like. When you can't find something, you blame someone else. That's how life works.
That's how life works. And then you get asked, where'd you leave it? Well, if I knew that.
Oh, there's a very funny situation last week at kids' basketball where someone had left... their keys. I didn't tell this story, did I?
No.
It's not that funny, but anyway. But someone had found their keys, and so there's this like announcement in the gymnasium.
In the gym.
Someone's keys. Whose keys are these? And one of the women yelled out, "Well, they're someone's."
It's a fair response.
Yes, they are definitely someone's.
They weren't yours, were they?
No,
this is where I thought the story was going, I must admit.
But just real conviction, they're someone's.
Well, it's hard to argue with that.
Yes, they are.
It's hard to argue with that, Whitey. Got to appreciate her for honesty and her attention to detail. They are definitely someone's. Adam Ramanauskas is always someone's. He's ours on the Breakfast Club, and he's back again on a Friday morning after a busy day in the car park, I'm sure, at Oaks Diorama. Good morning.
Very good morning. Clearly half. Whitey is not a basketball person. Well, it's called a stadium.
Yeah, I know. Simon Mitchell from South East Melbourne Phoenix calls it a gym.
No, it's called a stadium.
He calls basketball it a gym, stadium. So that's why he called it the gym.
That's exactly right.
No.
Just get on with the program.
When you listen to the program regularly, you'll understand.
It's called a stadium.
Yeah, it's a gym.
Is it really a stadium, though, if there's a seating capacity of about 14?
Yeah.
It's still a stadium?
Yes.
Grandstand seating.
That's what it is. Mm. You'll get there.
It's the gym.
It was a dower affair the other day.
It's like if I called a golf course a golf field or something. How would you feel
that's
about
fair enough.
A golf field?
That's fair enough, but I would tend to sort of lean towards the coach of the South East Melbourne Phoenix for terminology over yourself.
Well, let's ask our listeners what they think it is. Is it a gymnasium or a basketball stadium?
0416 90 50 52.
Bring the big issues on the table this morning.
Well, that's what we do. We won't hide from any of them.
No.
We'll not hide from any issues.
Do you think at under eights, as this competition I am a spectator in, should have the rings lowered, or do you think they should be at normal height?
I thought they were lowered. Back in the old days at the Dumber Valley gym.
In some, they are,
there was a different section where the rings were very, very low for little people.
It seems to be a very technical game at under eight level basketball, and also the rings are very high. So as a consequence, you get some very dour affairs.
There are some associations that lower the rings, and there are others that keep them at the normal height. So I'm probably more in the camp of keeping them at the normal height.
Why is that? When the kids can't get it to the ring.
We use different size footies and smaller fields for footy.
Exactly.
Why would we not alter the rings if we can?
Very good point.
My like cricket. What do we do with cricket? You know better than
I do. My like cricket's just more skill-based type setup. But when you get to under eights, under nines, they've completely reinvented or rejuvenated the way they do things. They aren't playing on full pitches lengthwise and all that sort of thing. And the way you... like back in the day when you and I played, Daniel, at under 12 level, you had to retire at 30 and then you could come back in at the end of the innings and all that sort of thing. Whereas now it's based on how many balls you face.
There was no retirement in my world.
Really?
No retirement. I made a lot of
centuries. We were 20.
A lot of centuries.
We were 20.
I had to retire at 30.
No.
20, 40, 60.
I never had to retire in my junior cricket career.
Well, that's a disgrace.
No, it's fantastic. Made a lot of runs. Dominant performer. And we won a lot of premierships on the back of my dominance. And that's okay.
A one-man show.
And then I'd open the bowling as well.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, well, see, that's why things had to change.
No.
But think... Was
there a limit on how many overs you were allowed to bowl?
No. If you were going to steam in from one end all day, you steamed in from one end all day.
Okay.
I actually
destroyed one of my good mate's cricket careers. That's a true story. I bowled him from one end for the entire of the innings, 28 overs straight, because he was the fastest bowler in the competition. And he never recovered from that day. We lost him. He became the fastest bowler who's a hard-hitting batsman. He just became a hard-hitting batsman.
A similar story happened to my brother. He bowled.
Hurt his back.
Bowled 38 overs one day. And then back was cooked. Yeah, never bowled again.
But you just, as a captain, you got the best bowl in the competition. Yeah. You just don't want to take him off.
Well, he wasn't that, my brother. I don't know what happened there. It's a long way from being the best bowler in the comp. Must have had a batsman field team.
A
38 overs is a lot.
I played a game.
38 overs is an awful lot.
I played a game of cricket with Stephen Bell, and Stephen Bell is now essentially the main operations man at HRV.
Right.
And
I went to school with Stephen.
He made 100, which was an extraordinary effort in under 12s, where he came back at the end of the innings.
Yeah.
And just put on a clinic and got to 100.
At the end of the innings?
Yeah.
So he made 20 or 30.
We retire, then you're allowed to...
come back at the end.
Now, I need to integrate myself into this story. We put on, I think, nearly 200, but there was a partnership of 65 at the start, and then we both came in at the end.
What'd you make?
I only made 60.
Disappointing.
It is a bit. Hmm. But we put on nearly 200, and I think there was about 50 sundries. Due to the inability to bowl straight on the opposition.
And to keep the ball with
what was that on the Malfoy or the synthetic?
Synthetic.
Yes.
And the small ground at Warrandyne out the back of the tennis courts. Very.
You played synthetic back then?
We're nine.
No, we played on mats.
Oh, mats. Oh, yeah. No, that might have been mats, actually.
Oh, so I'm not as stupid.
Sorry,
as
no.
Yeah, not as stupid
well,
as
I thought you were insinuating we're playing on turf as 8-year-olds.
No. We played on mats back then.
Yeah. Stephen Bell was a very good cricketer. And
carry the mats out to the pitch, wet mornings, with itchy all over your neck.
Yeah.
Shocking it was.
Put tufts underneath so you get a bit of an uneven bounce if you were bowling that day.
No, we didn't resort to cheating ever. I was too dominant for that.
Stephen Bell was a man of my own heart because he still had this, he still has that philosophy now when he plays cricket. He's there to entertain, first and foremost.
Think of all the cricketers out there, the local cricketers out there at the moment, with all the weather on the weekend.
And a shocker again tomorrow.
And another crap one tomorrow.
Yeah.
No more cricket.
It's a great result.
Why?
Well, it means I'm not missing out. Because there's only been two completed games, and there was a complete washout last week, and there's every chance, particularly if you're a turf cricketer, there'll be no cricket tomorrow.
No cricket tomorrow. Which means certainly in my time in cricket, a large proportion of the cricketing fraternity are race fans.
Yeah, no doubt.
So they'd be almost
less the case now than was the case 20 years ago.
Is that right?
No doubt about that.
Right. Because the form guy was always in the back pocket of the cricketer as he strode to the almost to the crease on Saturday afternoon.
Well, that's right. Well, it was one of the reasons why I got into racing was as a sort of 13, 14, 15-year-old playing senior cricket in the afternoon, having particularly the scorer would have his little transistor and would listen to the races and have the form guy next to him and all that sort of thing, and there'd be a quaddie with the older guys in the team, and that was part of the reason you got an interest in cricket. And you'd think to yourself the whole time, these blokes may as well be at the races. They're not concentrating on the cricket.
Which wouldn't have gone down with you very well at all, because you'd be a bit focused.
Exactly, as much as I love the races. But it was always a good thing, though, if you... if it was a really good day racing and you were batting, and then you'd have you go into the rooms and watch the races on the TV, you know, it was always a good... It was a bit flat if you had to field on Cox Plate Day or something like that in the heat, knowing what was unfolding. But if you had a good umpire or two umpires, that they were a bit sporting, sometimes they would change tea the schedule of tea, so you can actually accommodate the main race during the tea break. Yep.
To accommodate. Right, that's great umpiring. That'll get you the votes at the end of the year for the best umpire. There is a great development too in local cricket. I'm not sure if it's statewide or in Tassie, how it's working down there, but the Kookaburra Cup in the Eastern Cricket Association, well, it's not, it is wide, Eastern Cricket Association, the T20 competition has been expanded.
Which is interesting, because a lot of them are going the other way.
3 games to 5 games. Mm. Pools of 6 and not 4, which is a great result for me, because it's the only cricket I get to play these days. Tuesday night specials, no training. Everyone loves the Tuesday night T20, because you don't have to train.
Just a message out there for all coaches, that you don't have to train to play.
No, you didn't. My words, you do. My words, you do. If you want to play in my team, you betcha.
Except you.
Except for me. That's not quite true. I'll be there at some stage. Not quite true. But T20 expansion, it's fantastic. Great idea. That's initiative by the Eastern Cricket Association. Good luck to them. Starts on Tuesday night too, next Tuesday. So we just need some decent weather from Sunday and Monday, just to dry things out a touch, Rama.
Well, 24 on Monday.
Is it? Mm. What about Tuesday?
Not sure yet.
Stand by. We'll check your local guides.
Simmons, and this happened in the first quarter. You know, it doesn't look that bad, T, and the Ed Davis injury didn't look that bad either, but you just run into the chest of Royce O'Neal. He's trying to work out the kinks.
Trying to work out the kinks, but a bit of an injury concern for Ben Simmons and the Philadelphia 76ers yesterday. They ended up going down to the Utah Jazz too, 106 to 104, so that's second loss in succession, I think, Rambo.
Yeah,
is it?
And that's not a good injury for Ben Simmons. That's a similar injury that Michael Hurley did against North Melbourne. Now, he really struggled with that till the end of the season, had major surgery on that after the season finished. So hopefully it's only a couple of weeks. Look, most likely he'll probably play the next game, but a little AC sprain is quite painful.
Quite painful?
Quite painful, and albeit he's not a great outside shot, but for what he does near the basket, he would need full extension.
I saw a shot chart.
Yes.
Ben Simmons, was it yesterday I saw that, Rama? He hasn't taken one from outside the key.
No.
This expanded range that we were promised from Ben Simmons, where does it live?
Well, he's had 57 shots inside the key, and he's had 2 outside the key for the season.
It's not exactly a sample size, is it?
No.
Well, it's a good sample size inside the key, but he refuses to take the shot from outside.
And a good thing is, we spoke to Phil Murphy yesterday, and it's going to be a very exciting season. You look at Utah yesterday beating Philadelphia, so it's going to be a really, really tight season. It's not going to be like previous years with Golden State, so I think we're going to enjoy this NBA season.
I think we might. Paul's in the city. He wants to enjoy his cricket season, but it's a bit wet at the moment. Paul, good morning.
Oh, hi, fellas. Talking about local cricket, I was talking to a mate the other day, and he's telling me it costs $90 for a new Kookaburra ball these days. And I'm just thinking, how much does it cost these blokes to play cricket these days? Like, I'm in the 60s, and it used to be $2 for a ball when I was playing.
$2?
I've got... Yeah.
I don't know where you were playing.
Well, that's a very nice cricket ball. Good economy. $90 is it seems excessive. That's like
minimum,
a shearing.
Minimum $90. Yeah,
for
absolutely.
One cricket ball.
Yep.
Are you serious?
Very expensive. Our club, when I lose a lot of them in the creek.
Well, you would if you're expanding your range over deep mid wicket.
They are about $90, maybe even a little bit more than that. And look, to be honest, Paul, if you want to know sort of the prices on things, you know, your subs are going to cost you minimum $300, and then you've got umpires that you've got to pay for every week, which is, you know, usually around about $10 per player. So over the course of the year, then you've got to get the afternoon tea situation. So, which is probably the most important part of the whole lot. So it can be quite an expense. And then, you know, you want to get a good cricket bat, that costs you at least $500 these days. So, minimum.
Well, I'm prepared to pay a premium for my cricket bat because I get to use that every week and dominate. And
these are really off-air conversations where we understand that we're only half being serious.
Well, I haven't dominated for a while. I haven't played for a while. But a new Kookaburra at $90 a piece.
No.
That is we had R&D looking at it at Rebel Sports, $89.99 for a new Kookaburra. So that's... I'm actually staggered by that, I must admit. I would have thought maybe $49, $50.
No, they are expensive. That's why local cricket clubs, particularly by about February, getting to March, the balls that are used for training aren't particularly good, because what happens is that the balls that are used in games goes to the captain at the end of the game, and then that gets put into the training bucket.
The training ball bucket, yeah.
And so you start the year with some pretty handy practice balls, but by the end you've got, because they're just so expensive.
Well, that's quite remarkable. A match day sharing these days is $190. R&D is telling me at the back as well. That's a lot too.
That is very expensive.
Yeah, but you don't see in local football, you don't use a new sharing every week. Whereas in cricket, you have to use a new cricket ball every week.
I think you do use a new sharing every week, don't you, in local footy?
No.
Sure you do. Of course, for the games you do.
No, I don't.
My word, you do. No. Absolutely. No. I've coached local footy, you haven't. My word, we do.
Kids.
Yeah, mate. The kids are different. We're talking. This is a match day sharing. This is a leather exquisite piece. This is like art. $190 is good change, though, isn't it?
See, Rami, you've never experienced like a football where you train under lights at about 7:30 at night.
Oh yes, I have.
In the fog,
you want to
and
make
you
bet?
Use those yellow balls that have got a lacquer on them.
Well, I experienced that in AFL football, because Sheets thought it was a good idea that we'd train a little bit later to allow people to come after work and after school.
Yeah, but
so we'd stand there around all afternoon.
That was 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock. He used to keep us out there till about 7.
Oh, well, most.
And there's about 4 lights at Wendy.
Most local football clubs don't even start their training until that time, because they've got a bit. They've worked all day.
Well, football was my full-time job.
What time did you? What year did you start?
98.
Because I remember, as you talk about that, we would start training at 6 o'clock.
Mm. We'd start about 4:30, 5 o'clock.
Yeah, that was just
training. That wasn't that late.
Yes, it was.
When I first started, 95, it was 6 o'clock, because everyone worked or went to uni, but they worked. So we would start. Get there sort of 6 o'clock, start 7.
Do you know who was the one that changed it?
Who was that?
It was Terry Wallace. Mm. He was the first one to really start changing training times, and would train often in the morning. Mm. Because, you know, again, I can only go from covering football training back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Hawthorn would always train late. Essendon would train late. And North Melbourne would train late. They were the three clubs that invariably train quite late when other clubs were training in the morning or around lunchtime.
Sheeds used to love to allow the kids to come from school, because where Wendy Hill is positioned, it's right in the middle of Essendon. So there was a couple of local schools around the area. So he would always enjoy a crowd at training.
So there was a situation where he would always close his final training session, which was the captain's run for whatever reason, but the two main training sessions would always be open.
Yep.
Mondays and Wednesdays, and then the day before the game was closed. Whereas now, the captain's run is the only one that is open at most football clubs, where they don't do any sort of positional game simulation type of activity.
Well, we used to have our opposition meeting on a Tuesday afternoon. Robert Shaw would take that, so then go out the train on Wednesday. Another meeting pre-training on the Friday around opposition, so then it was... It was a little bit tactical, that last training session, always with Sheeds.
Mm. But those yellow Sharons that were not proper Sharons for training on a Thursday night or a Tuesday night were weapons, particularly if you had a good kick on you.
Weapons.
See, our property steward, A.D. Schwegler, he was very good, very good. A younger guy in those years compared to a lot of other property stewards. All his football, they're like his babies. So if it was a wet training session, he would deflate the footballs, he'd dry them out properly.
That's love.
And then pump them up and then deflate them again so the ends wouldn't get hard. He was very good, 80.
He's at
very,
the Giants.
He
thought he was James Hurd.
He used to wear Hurdy's jumper, but he...
And get a haircut like James.
He will say he played this year his 500th game.
Hmm.
So he's been a property steward for over 500 games at both Essendon and GWS, so... Been terrific for the Giants. He has. He's had a lot of those young kids live with him and his partner over the years. So he's been terrific, A.D. Schwegler.
That's love if you're deflating the balls. I love that stuff.
And it would hang him, put him on a little coat hanger in the drying room.
True love, that is. That's good business. That's care and detail. Mm. Good stuff. Are you? Who wins the Top Gun final tomorrow night at the Meadows? Who wins the Top Gun final? 8 of the best dogs going around. It's going to be big at the Meadows. Make sure you get there. I reckon. I reckon Baruga Brett's going to win it. Can't wait for that.
Yeah, all of a sudden, you've turned into George Ferrugia.
Mate, I'm all over George's action. I've been listening to George for years, and now I'm a piece of it. I'm getting involved.
A little bit left field.
Yeah, well, it was, but I just remembered it was on tomorrow night at the Meadows. Get there and have a look at the $1 million up for grabs. $1 million chase. Goodness gracious, mate. A little bit of value there with Baruga Brick. They're on the four box, but I just reckon there's something that's going to be there. Gareth Hall will tell us more about that after 7:30 in the hall pass, because he's a greyhound expert around here.
Aficionado.
Well, aficionado or an expert. He's just very good.
He's an expert in a lot of things. The trots, the greyhounds.
He knows a lot of stuff, this Gareth. Mm. It's a good field. A crack field.
Gareth's horse ran second in the last race at Flemington yesterday.
It did.
He was very excited. He thought it was going to win there at one point.
Mm. Well, so did I must admit. Mm. Thought it was going to power. I outstayed down the straight in the last race. So, and get us all home in the quaddy, but didn't quite happen. Always good fun on a Friday with the best in the business. And Dean Lester is certainly that. He joins us again. Dino, good morning to you.
Good morning, Daniel.
Have you enjoyed Cup Week, Dino?
I have. I've enjoyed watching it all and listening to Cup Week radio and watching your parking shenanigans and all sorts of things going on.
Oh, the bloody hell.
A good thing beaten there.
Oh, it was a good thing beat, Dino. I was just hemmed in like half of views yesterday. I just couldn't get out.
The funniest part was that he was just so proud of his park. He couldn't realise how...
George Costanza moment. Like,
that's right.
I nailed it. Nailed it.
I got so close. You know, I just... I can't believe how close I got. There's a reason why you got close.
So leave me. Explain to me what happened to you yesterday. You parked sort of further up the road than I did.
You caught a train.
No. On Tuesday, you goose. Yeah. We're talking about parking.
Yeah.
Was the road shut off?
When?
Yesterday when you left.
No, but I didn't park where you parked. No, but I parked further up.
Yeah, no, but was the road cut off?
Yes, it was.
Okay, right.
Yeah, it always is.
Well, you could have told me that Saturday when we walked out. Don't park there on Tuesday. Anyway, we digress. Do you know, in fact, I'll get to Quinny first. Nick Quinn, the guy from the tab. Morning, Nicholas.
Morning, Daniel. Morning, all.
I see you've been hanging out with some very famous people this week, Nicholas.
Yes.
Adam Ramanaskis, that's tomorrow, I think.
Usain Bolt, the fastest man in the world, and he was there too?
Yes. Finally got paparazzi'd. Jimmy Bartel, eat your heart out.
Usain Bolt, that's very impressive.
No, it was quite humorous.
He was looking for tips, was he?
That's right. They said, can you come in here and give some tips to Usain? And I didn't click that Usain was Usain Bolt. And I sort of...
How many other Usains you
Well, a little sleep deprived. And then I got in there and got marched upstairs into this little private booth with Usain and a few of his little crew and some female admirers.
Right. Are you yours or
Usain? You so.
Okay.
No, it was very good. And I said, back Miami Bound in the Oaks. And he said, if Miami Bound wins the Oaks, we'll go to Miami. And we all laughed. But I'm taking that as a written contract. And I'm just refreshing my DMs on Twitter, waiting for him to contact me.
The world's fastest man slides into your DMs. That's
Hasn't happened yet.
That's good business.
I'd like my wife Emma to join the panel today because she had a big collect yesterday. She won
a lot of races.
Yeah, she does. She wanted to tell me when I got home about how much she won. Including on the last race, where she backed straight out the place, Don't Listen, at $8.50.
I've never listened.
Where'd you back Don't Listen for? She said, I backed it after you, because you don't listen.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
$8.50 the place.
That's a great result. Denise Bartlett had a day out yesterday. She had four steamboat specials. Get up.
Yeah.
Yep. KB doesn't tip. Denise does. And four steamboats got up, so she had a great day too. It was Oaks Day. It was Ladies' Day. Unsurprising that happened on Ladies' Day, Whitey. Em and Denise had great days. Dino, before we get into tomorrow for Stakes Day, are you looking forward to more the racing at Flemington or the dogs at the Meadows? Because you are a greyhound racing Leviathan with a big win yesterday.
Oh, we had a winner yesterday, Daniel, yes. Yeah, we've had a few winners lately.
Yeah, you have.
Out of the same litter. And, Fidelia won at Warrigal.
At a healthy $15, Dino.
Yes, there's nothing for me, Daniel. But anyway, it was good to see her win. And, Seneca will win the Top Gun tomorrow night.
Well, there you go.
You'll be with Molly Haynes on Off the Leash the way you're going, Dino.
Yeah, litter of the week.
That's right.
Litter of the week. Can't get enough of that. That's number three, by the way, in the Top Gun final, Seneca, that Dino was talking about at the Meadows tomorrow night. So check your local guides how you can get involved there. Of course, you can get it at tab.com. Melbourne.com.au. Find the markets there. Let's have a look, though, at headquarters for the last day of the Melbourne Cup Carnival. The VRC Carnival has been terrific. And we have one day to go. Stakes Day. It's always the family edition of the 4 days of the carnival. And it's a good chance to get out there and enjoy some fabulous racing, although the weather is going to be a little bit rubbish. But get out and get amongst it. And what we do here in the Friday Forum for first-time players is go through the quaddie legs, have a bit of a look at that, sharpen the pencils a bit, and give you a chance to breathe and assess what you might need to do in preparation for the Saturday quaddie. And we start tomorrow, team, with race number 6. It's the first leg of the quaddie. We've got big fields again, 16 going around, Dino. And it looks as though that Rondinella is going to be favourite. Kerry McAvoy in the saddle, number 7. At tab.com.au.
Yeah, and she's a very good chance in the race, Daniel. I thought that the effort of Girl Tuesday at Moonee Valley was very good, number 13, and I think the extra distance will suit. She's very well weighted this time as opposed to last start, and I think she'll be very hard to beat, number 13. I think the good value chance here is Aliferous on the back up from Tuesday. She ran well on Tuesday at Flemington, and on the back up, these mares usually run very well in this race. And back in the winter, she ran third in the Queensland Derby behind Mr. Quickie and Vow and Declare. So she's got some reasonable form lines for this race. And I think Chris Lees would have just targeted this race to run well. Rondinella's a great winning chance. I'll be certainly putting her in. Amangiri's a mare I've got a lot of time for, but she does go up sharply in the weights for winning last start, number 3, and a little chance to number 6, another dollar. But 13, the one to beat, 5, the good value.
What's the market say? Speaking for a couple of roughies, the best back runner.
Oh, goodness gracious, mate.
Excuse me, is Rondinella. Rondinella's been 650 into 480, the favourite at that quote. Fidelia, a $19 chance, Dino. Some support there. Do you give Fidelia another chance if you're going wider for the quaddies?
Not for me. I think she's a run on sort of 14, 1600 metre horse. Another step out to 2000, and, you know, she always needs luck.
Miss Siska's been 34 in to 18. Would Miss Siska stun you?
I can see why there's backing for her, because she's been around the mark in these races before. She ran well in this race, I think, last year from memory. So I can understand there's a bit of support for her, but I can say that probably about 10 of these, because a lot of them are coming off a Group 1 race, but we've got to try and narrow it down a little bit.
Yep. And
I noticed there's one, number 11, Quinny.
Number 11, yep.
Fidelia?
Yes.
You've tipped it?
Yes. I'm forgiving.
You are very forgiving. We know someone who might have a piece of that horse.
Who?
Do you know, is that yours?
No. Oh, no. The Greyhound's mine.
Oh, the Greyhound's yours.
So Robbie Griffiths and I are involved in the Greyhound of the same name.
My apologies.
Mm.
Right, okay.
And in fairness, Daniel, it is rare to go through a Flemington program without Dino having a runner, so I can understand how you would have made that mistake.
A Leviathan in all codes is our man, Dino.
Number 14, Ocean X, has been 23 into 13, Dino.
Ooh.
She's had very little luck of late in probably slightly weaker races, but, yeah, she's not the worst. I'd have her more as a trifecta chance.
Before we continue, have you given Dino a massive pat on the back for the double-figure winner that he gave us as well?
Oh, we gave him a big pump-up Monday.
No, this was yesterday.
I was doing the Friday form pat on
when
the back.
He said when we were doing the form before the Bart Cummings Day, and we're talking about Surprise Baby and Miami Bound, and Miami Bound was about $13 for the Oaks, and Dino basically just said, whatever money you've got in your pocket, just have on it at the $13 for the Oaks.
This is not unusual around here, that ran these parts, as they say in the old Westerns. That's what he does. That's why he's the best in the business, the world's greatest form analyst. But yes, another big win there for Dino, which is what we're coming to expect. Well, we've come to expect over many years in his excellence. So that means, Rama, we've got how many numbers in the first leg?
5. So 13, 5, 7, 3, and 6.
13, 5, 7, 3, and 6. Nick Quinn's top selection, 11, not getting a mention, which is interesting in itself.
A setback.
Race 7 is the second leg of the quaddie. It is the Network 10 Chatham Stakes over the 1,400 metres. Group 3 affair, 200,000 up for grabs. And we see a very familiar combination in Cup Week at the top of the market. Iconoclasm, Mytho. Got the favourite with DT O'Brien and D Oliver combination, Dino, at 480tab.com.au.
Yeah, he's certainly one of the chances, Daniel. The little query is how the track comes up. I think drier the better for Iconoclasm, but he's one of the chances. I'm going to go with the ever-reliable Widgie Turf. He just keeps running good races. He's well-suited in this grade. Actually, I think from the draw, he won't have to get right back to last, as he often does. I think he's got a terrific chance in the race, but it's another very even race. I think Reykjavik can run very well. Number 10 won the Winter Championship at Flemington. I thought the first up run was sound. I think it's got a very good chance. Next best, number 5, I should say, in Haunted. Got a very good record at 1,400 metres and won at 1,200 last start and can step up and run well. And certainly Iconoclasm's there with a chance. And the other one to mention is Noble Boy, number 12, who's on the back up from a defeat in the Goulburn Cup last Sunday. But I think certainly got a chance. But, yeah, another very even race.
Iconoclasm has been the best backed runner, $5 into $4.80. Now the favourite at that quote, Adderall's Joker, a $5 second elect Noble Boy at $5. Widgie Turf, $5.50. But yeah, there's been specking for a couple of runners, including number 4, The Place. Tom Melbourne, a $7 chance.
Tom Melbourne. Goodness gracious me. We're still back in that.
Must be nearly all over for Tom.
Widgie Turf. Don't, I only asked because George was very keen to get it into his quaddy, and we know how impressive he is in these things.
Mm.
Right up, good work.
It's on top for me too. So
yep.
He'll
just be pleased about that. That's all.
Okay, Admiral's Joke is the tricky one because he's also an emergency for the McKinnon Stakes. So you'd think he's been trained up for the McKinnon Stakes at 2,000 metres, and here he is in a 1,400 as a backup run if he doesn't get a start. So he's the one I had a lot of trouble with in that race.
Yeah, good point. Good point. What? Just while we're talking about these things, what surface are you planning on?
Well, it's a very good question, Daniel. With the amount of rain that it may be predicted over the next 24 hours, it's certainly genuine soft, and the rail goes out a little bit further, so I think they'll be heading out a little bit as the day goes on.
Yeah, and what do we know what the rail is going to be?
9 metres, I believe.
Metres. Okay. Yeah. So rail to 9, and it's going to be, a damp track, you would think, with what's going to be happening in the next 24 hours or so in Melbourne town, so put that into your calculations as well. Rammer, can you have some numbers ready for us, please?
2, 10, 5, 6 and 12.
2, 10, 5, 6 and 12. Well, let's get to the feature event on the card, the Sepelt McKinnon Stakes. $2 million, Group 1 weight for age affair over the 2,000 metres. And for the last time, we'll be seeing Hartnell go around. That is it. And then Reg Fleming's going to get him to hang around with after his career, which is nice, a very nice thing. One of my favourite horses, in fact, probably my favourite these days, watching Hartnell go around. So a last chance to say goodbye to Hartnell, and he might be a chance too, Dino, in this race, although the market says that Melody Bell, who was so good on the first day of the carnival on Derby Day with Opie Boston just steering beautifully, is the favourite at tab.com.au.
Yeah, she is. She deserves to be favourite, and I think she's got a great winning chance, but I am tipping the fairy tale. I think Hartnell can run really well. I think his run here in the Turnbull Stakes was full of merit, and I'm adamant he should have won the Caulfield Cup, and that form's been pretty much franked through the week. I think he's got a great winning chance here. I think he's just rolled forward from the draw, put himself in a good spot, and I think he'll be right in the finish. Melody Bell's a great winning chance. I think little chances to Harlem, who has won 2 Australian Cups at this track and distance and seems big odds. Kingswell Dream, who won the Turnbull Stakes at this track and distance and wasn't disgraced in the Cox Plate. And a little chance to Humidor, who comes back in trip, which I think does suit him, and he wasn't suited by the slow pace of the Moonee Valley Cup. I think he's probably got a little chance as well. But no, I'm thinking Humidor's a good each-way chance. Hartnell's a good each-way chance.
Yep. Hartnell's a $9 chance. Humidor's a $10 chance. Melody Bell heads the market at $3.50. Was 3 out to 3.80, but subsequently 3.80 back into 3.50. Magic Wand, a $7 chance, and it's been a busy prep for Magic Wand, Dean. I can't remember a horse going from the Cox Plate to the Melbourne Cup back to this event, can you?
No, because this is only about the third year it's been run on the final day, but often the Bart Cummings stayers of yesteryear. I can remember Hyperno running in the McKinnon on the Saturday, winning the Melbourne Cup and winning the Queen Elizabeth. So they used to do it in days gone by, but not in recent times. So very busy schedule for her.
Number 6, Kluger, nearly melted behind the gates in the Cox Plate. Do you throw the Japanese horse into contention just because of the class factor that they do have and maybe could be an improver second up?
I think he's had a busy time for another reason. He pulled up with a throat abnormality in the Cox Plate, and he's had laser surgery on his throat since he ran in the Cox Plate 2 weeks ago. So he's made a quick recovery. He goes around tomorrow.
I'm not putting him in.
No.
On the back of that information, which is very important, by the way, Dino, I'm not putting him in. He's out. He's out, Kluger. Have a spell. The slow pace of the Melbourne Cup, and we keep hearing about jockeys saying, oh, the pace was too bloody slow, pace was too slow. What's the solution for the jocks who are finding themselves in positions, or is there a solution for the jocks in those positions who know they can't win off the slow pace but sort of can't do anything about it?
Yeah, it's certainly not as easy in a field of 24, Daniel, to try and make something happen. And saw a couple at about the 1,000-metre mark had just had enough of the pace and tried to make something happen. And Mustadir with Damien Oliver aboard was one of those. And they ended up finishing at the back anyway because it was just going to be a dash home. And it wasn't. It was a 3,200-metre race, but it was really about a 700-metre sprint, and that's why, one, the horses up the front were well-advantaged, and I'm really surprised that the internationals, who seem to like it tougher and more of a slog, didn't try and make it that way. So, I think a lot of faith was put in that, the O'Brien horses, one of them would roll along, and eventually one did, but it was not until about the 1,200-metre mark. So it was, it was a messy race.
Mm, okay, that's a good assessment. I was keen to ask you about that since Tuesday, so glad I got that off my chest. Also, just on the gates situation, the barriers situation at Flemington this week, Matty Welsh was from Racing.com and used to be part of the trial files here with Mickey Felgate, was tweeting yesterday about the gate situation for the 19 circle races. Only two have won from inside barrier three, and nine have won in double figure alleys. Is that going to continue, do you reckon, tomorrow?
Probably, with especially if it rain, with rain and wear and tear on the track, I think that's a distinct possibility, yeah.
All right, well, just remember that when you're putting your numbers together. Tomorrow, we've got one leg of the quaddie to go. That is the Sapel Drumball Grand Handicap over the 1,100 metres, a benchmark 80 affair, and we've got 16 going around again, Dino. And Hal Vorsen for your mate Robbie Griffiths is favourite, even though it's a pretty open field. $6 the field at tab.com.au.
Yes, it's a recent introduction. Second year they've run this race, and after 36 races, to put a race on like this at the end of the carnival is a bit morbid because it's very tough. It's a lot of different form lines, and even it was like Hal Vorsen who's first up. So I think he's got a very good chance. He's got plenty of weight, Hal Vorsen, but I like the first up win of Tahitian Dancer. I like her as a run-on sprinter, and she was tried up to 1,600 last preparation, but I like where she'll probably posse up, a little bit off midfield, D. Oliver weaving his magic, and I think she'll run very well. Esperance placed in this race last year, and I think he's well served to do so again. Gets a claim here for T.O. Nugent. I think gives him a legitimate chance. Poised to Strike has got a terrific form down the straight. Ran well in Sydney last start and has a massive weight turnaround on one of his main rivals, Morrissey, from when they met earlier in the year at Caulfield. So I think he's a legitimate chance. And Morrissey, as I mentioned, probably not that well weighted, but I thought ran well fresh and looks a real target race for him. And Hal Vorsen would be the other one I'd be including. But I think Tahitian Dancer looks a really good chance in an open race.
Has been the early firm at Tahitian Dancer, $12 into $8. Hal Vorsen, a drifting favourite, $4.60 out to $6. There's been support for the two James Cummings runners. Esperance has been $9 into $6.50. And Screen Ager has been popular at the $7.50 quote. But a sticky way to end the day.
A very sticky way. I mentioned, I know that you've got Screen Ager in your numbers, Quinny.
I'm all about value. You know that, Daniel.
Well, down in the weights, heavy track.
I thought by that stage the wide draw might be a big advantage.
Barrier 17, yeah, look at you. You are astute.
Hasn't won yet.
No, it hasn't won yet. Rammer?
12, 1, 2, 7, and 4.
12, 1, 2, 7, and 4. So the numbers for Dino, 13, 5, 7, 3, 6. From 2, 10, 5, 6, 12. From 1, 15, 7, 8, 3. And 12, 1, 2, 7, 4. We probably should have a chat about the Daily Sprint Classic, the first Group 1 tomorrow. It's over the 1,200 metres, of course, and it's a good field, Dino. Just the nine going around, but there's some real quality there, and Santa Ana Lane heads them all.
Yeah, he does, and deservedly so. He's running the Everest, was outstanding. He won this race last year. Really interesting the way it sets up, because I think Nature Strip drawing the outside's a great draw for him, because he can head to that outside rail. He's been very effective down the straight before. Malibu Style's probably the horse that settles second. He's drawn next to him. Inner Time's drawn seven, so she's going to be probably just behind them. And Sound Around the Lane, fair chance he's going to be second last or last in the run, and with a bit to do, but he's got such a big finish on him. I think he can probably get to the right lane and probably get over the top of them.
The one little knock on Sander, he doesn't have a very good record at Flemington. He's raced there six times. The only time he won was last year's edition of this race. Is that any knock, or has he always ran well potentially in lead-up races to some of his other grand finals?
Yeah, well, he ran enormously in the...
Gilguy.
The Gilguy. He ran second, and he ran a terrific race in the Newmarket before he won the TJ Smith. So I don't think his runs have been too bad at all there, really. And I think anything that he did as a 3- and 4-year-old, you can probably discard, as opposed to what he's done in the last 18 months or so.
Are any of these horses, would this have been their grand final in a Sound Around the Lane? Obviously, the Everest was probably the grand final, Dino, you would think. Loving Gabby on the Manicato last start, and I imagine, I don't know, would that be the grand final? Would this be the grand final?
Well, yeah, Inner Time was only first up into the Everest, and it was obviously a big target for her, but she goes well down the straight, and the Bostonian's one that has avoided the, going towards the Everest, and he's gone through our sprint series here. So he's probably had this race in mind all along. But I think with the way Sander Lane's trained, that he was only second up into the Everest, I still think there'll be petrol in the tank for tomorrow.
All right, that's the Daly Sprint Classic race number 5, the first Group 1 tomorrow. Let's have a look at your formula bet, if you don't mind, Dino. Who are we playing for? What have you got for us?
Playing for Gail Clark of Ringwood. And for Gail, we're having $40 to win race 2, number 7, Grinzing a Star. $40 to win race 4, number 5, True Self. So two different races, Daniel. Oh, I know you love that.
This is brilliant.
And $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 2, number 7, into race 4, number 5, for Gail Clark of Ringwood.
The all-up comes to $7.14. Grinzing a Star, a $3.40 chance. True Self, a $2.10 favourite.
$7.14.
That's changed.
It was $9.24, but when you came in...
How much did you have on it?
So Jaguary was obviously still in the market at the start of the program. It has subsequently been scratched.
So what is it now?
$7.14.
$7.14. I was a bit like you, Dino. I was taken aback. A bit distressed. 7.14 for race 2, number 7, into race 4, number 5, which does mean, Rammer, that we've had race 2 covered, race 4 covered, race 5, the Daly Sprint Classic, and then the 6, 7, 8, 9. So we've covered, what's that, 7? Seven legs.
Seven races. I hope the Rammer Ruffy's in one of the other races.
If the Rammer Ruffy is in another race, I'm going to have to go to the one we've missed and just get a tip anyway.
Yeah, no. We've mentioned the Ramaruffi, and it's in the Matriarch, the Tab Matriarch, race 6, Aliferous. I think she'll run a bold race at big odds.
It is race 6, number 5, Aliferous, the Ramaruffi. What's the Ramaruffi paying at this stage, Quinny? I know you're all over that for us.
Yeah, absolutely all over it. As per usual, Daniel, as I continue to...
Just scroll.
Just race
scroll.
6, number 5.
Trent would have had it up by now.
Currently an $18 chance the win, $5 chance the place.
18 the win.
5 the place.
5 the place. Righto, well, that is good business. I'll be getting involved in that. Speaking of Trent Langscale.
And his voice.
He nearly broke down.
He's off.
Nearly broke down on Tuesday.
He's like a Gay Waterhouse horse that just can't get through the campaign.
He sent a... he sent an email yesterday, a media release from tab.com.
Oh, yes.
This was outstanding. Like, now, what's his job? So that's okay. Sent the media release to whoever he sends it to on the email address list. And he says, at the bottom it says, "This collect of almost $35,000 from a $1 outlay is simply one of the most remarkable paydays in Tab history." He was talking about a little multi got up. Tab's Trent Langscale said. So he's quoted himself.
In the email. Third person himself on paper.
That's outstanding.
So I think we should acknowledge that piece of excellence from Trent just to insert himself into the story there.
That is outstanding.
The only thing disappointing about that is he doesn't, it's not in the headline. Langscale surprise. At best.
The brilliant. Chief and Media Officer now quoting himself. I love it.
I think that is brilliant stuff.
Oh, no doubt.
Absolutely brilliant. So well done to Trent. He's had a big carnival. The fact that he survived this deep after nearly dying on Tuesday is credit to his constitution, a strong-willed man he is.
There was also an incident in the betting ring yesterday.
What happened?
Involving someone in this studio.
Oh.
And oh, that's Quinny's. He's coughed it up pretty quick.
It's come to our attention via a text.
What happened?
There was an incident in the betting ring.
Nick, explain to our listeners what happened, please. Oh, Juppy.
What Juppy sledged you?
Does he dump me in?
No. It's a text has come in. Someone has observed it.
What happened, Nick?
Shouldn't we be getting to the news at 7:30?
No, there's no news at 7:30. Did you get sledged?
A patron had some less than complimentary things to say, and I...
Did you respond?
Yes.
Oh. What happened to the patron when you responded?
Turned to water would be the best way to describe it.
So you've gone full intimidation mode. Beast mode, Quinny. Fluffy hair.
Thanks, gentlemen.
It just says, ask Quinny about being sledged yesterday in the betting ring. The bloke went to water when challenged by the great man. Well, that's what it says.
Very positive feedback.
That's in hindsight, it probably wasn't the smart thing to do, but that's okay. We live and learn.
If he melted, you win.
So there's some standover tactics from you.
Is this all because you've met Usain and it's a, don't you know who
this is before meeting Usain, actually.
Oh.
This was the other Usain that he met.
Oh, yes. That's
that he knows. Gareth Hall has jumped into the studio for the Friday Hall Pass. It's great to have him part of our team. Gareth, good morning.
Hello, Daniel, Rammer and Whitey.
Nice to be with you.
It is.
I'll tell you what.
Nice to be with me.
It is. It's nice to be with you. I'll tell you what. I do love an employee, a colleague that really embraces team and what we are as a station here in RSN 927. I've never seen more branded apparel worn into the studio by one person than our man's got on at the moment. A tracksuit top, RSN 927. A puffer vest, RSN 927. A cap, RSN 927. I don't know how you do it and where you've pinched all your gear from, but well done to you for embracing what we do here in RSN 927.
Nah, no problems. Anytime.
Where's the polo shirt?
Where is the polo shirt? Is
that under doesn't it? Quite fit well, the white.
No.
It doesn't. It shows it's the man boobs.
It's more the material. It's a very clean material, the polo shirt.
No, I just like, because when I head downstairs now, the coffee girls know who I am because of the RSN. They don't know my name, but they know where I work. So I can order a coffee and they can bring it up.
They bring it up?
Yes.
They do not.
They do.
They do not bring it up.
Cheryl, she's a beautiful lady, and she brings it up. Did you want one?
No.
No.
Cheryl's on long service.
Cheryl hasn't been here for weeks. She hasn't been here for weeks.
I made that up.
We know.
Hey, Daniel, have you enjoyed your week? Because I thought the coverage on Cut Week Radio, which you have led, has been absolutely superb.
I had a great
credit
week.
To yourself.
Now, as you know, it's great teamwork on Cut Week Radio. We love having everyone involved. You've
got
been
a little bit loose there last night.
Yeah, it does tend to do that late in the day when Turfy sort of goes off on tangents. But it's great to work with the whole crew. It's been good fun. We've got a day to go tomorrow. And then you have been dominating proceedings. You were at the Kennedy Oaks Ladies Lunch at Crown the other day, just talking to everyone, all and sundry. Was that the highlight for you? Or was it yesterday when your beautiful horse, Nakovi, just nearly got there in the last at headquarters?
Oh, there's plenty of highlights. I can't single out one, Daniel. But the Oaks lunch was pretty fun. And any of the tradie boys working today, nice and early on a Friday morning, I highly recommend, this is the best tip, when those tickets go on sale next year, I highly recommend that you get close to a computer and make sure that you buy some. Because I'm tipping if you buy a table, I don't know what the cost is. I think it's around $100 but
ahead.
You talk about markets. You know, Rami, you're a bit of a man that likes to buy and then sell. I think you could sell it for at least $500.
Well, there's only a couple of tables allowed.
Well, there's 12.
Isn't it?
No, you can. I don't think it. I think it's first in best dress. But I think there's 1,200 people that Palladium Room can fit, and 1,100 are women. And dressed to the T's. They all look sensational. So well done to the girls.
Well done to the girls. Good stuff.
What were you wearing yesterday? The ladies' lunch.
I wore a nice pink shirt
did
and
you
a
wear
blue
a suit?
Jacket. No, I didn't wear a suit because we're sitting on a very uncomfortable couch.
The couch doesn't have a back.
It did look uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's like a banana lounge.
Like, it's very uncomfortable. So we're out in the foyer. And as they walk in, we try and grab the guests. And I have to sit down there for 6 hours straight usually because I have to go and do RSN Central. And there's no way in the world that it's like being on a... Have you ever been on one of those... Oh, you would have. You're always up at the front, at the back, and you're in between two bigger people, and you're in the middle. That's what it feels like. After like heading to London, 12 hours. Not very.
And most importantly, you're wearing a suit rather than shorts for these functions? Singapore.
Yeah. Well, I made a mistake, and I owned that mistake the other day. I got one hell, like, I've been sprayed. I've been sprayed a few times, but that bloke gave me one hell of a spray. And that death glare.
You know who it was? Do you know who it was?
No.
Graham Helbish.
Former chairman of Cricket Australia.
Well, good on you, Graham. He scared me.
Chairman of the Eastern Footy League these days, I think.
I mean, so are you going to tell the story, or are we going to tell the story of what took place?
When?
Last Friday. Because it was a serious issue.
It was.
Yeah. It was a breach.
What happened? Wasn't an unforced error either. It was a forced error by you.
Explain.
I don't know. What happened?
Well, we told you that that wasn't really going to cut it, that attire down at Crown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I told you so.
No, I'll be right. I was outside
of the Carbine Club lunch, first of all, so I wasn't in that lunch.
Doesn't matter.
So Gareth goes down there, gets absolutely hammered for his attire. So
shorts.
Then,
had shorts and Converse One Stars.
So
on.
Then Matt Nevitt, who was producing for him down there, you gave him your credit card and said, go to politics and buy a suit. That's pretty much how it happened, wasn't it?
And it was a disgrace of a choice by Matthew Nevitt.
Well, Matthew Nevitt's rolling around with a dusty haircut at the moment.
That's a good point.
It cost me about $600 for the worst suit politics has got in the store. And I think the lady saw him coming from a mile away and he's, you know, I just need to quickly buy a suit. And she goes, that one there, son. So he delivers his suit to me and I took it home to Dan and she fainted, basically. She threw it straight in the bin.
No,
we went to the Salvos and put it in that. Because no one would wear it. I did. You can't wear it.
Well, that's because it didn't fit.
No, it was the worst colour. It was embarrassing.
Well, it couldn't be more embarrassing than what you're wearing there.
Steve should have kicked me out then, not wearing what I was wearing the shorts. Or Graham, yeah. Anyway, we've got a winner tomorrow, boys.
Well, let's go back to yesterday, though, because you were animated yesterday because your horse, Nakavi's been giving you a great ride through the Spring Carnival. Should have won at Moonee Valley. Probably shouldn't have won yesterday, but, gee, put up a good fight. Nearly did. What's it like, Gareth, when you've got a good horse who's running through the Cup Carnival? I would give anything to have a good horse running through the Cup Carnival.
No, it's been a lot of fun. She came from Perth. We probably weren't expecting. We were expecting that she would be competitive, and she was okay, and that Blue Sapphire. Then I thought she nearly won, or should have won there at Moonee Valley.
Should have.
On Cox Plate Day. And then we didn't have high expectations yesterday because Dino and Gator and all the best experts in the game were declaring California Zimble. So we thought that she's a strong each-way chance back in trip, but she gave us a wonderful sight. And I thought she was nearly home at the clock tower, but you know, it was too good to be true to have a winner on Oaks Day. And at the end of the day, it was a weird feeling after it because you're so excited and then it's sort of disappointment just for a little while because you thought you're that close and then you think, oh, how good's that? You ran second on Oaks Day. And in fact, I'm going to do a rammer here and drop a name. I was walking down the stairs with James Cummings and he saw his barracking. And
Maestro.
He said, well done, boys. And he knew the horse back the front was quite amazing. Oh, that was a great run. She raced well there at Moonee Valley last start. So he's a superstar, James Cummings. But I said, how do you handle it when you have all the highs and the lows? But he has a lot more than me on a particular race day with certain runners. And he said, you just get used to levelling out a little bit, but it can ruin your day or make your day.
Well, it didn't ruin yours.
No, I was up and about for a little while. And I tell you what, the VRC do a wonderful job because after the race, there's a winner's bar and then there's a loser's bar. So they put you into the loser's bar and everyone can have a drink from all of the connections who lost. And it was great to be in the last race yesterday because the bar went on for another hour.
That's a win.
The only problem is that the replay comes up every 30 seconds. So you have to live through it again. But anyway, I'll tell you what, the highlight for me over the carnival is Craig Williams and Dee Oliver just turning back the clock. Not turning back the clock, but they aren't stopping, are they? There's no one, like Damien Lane's had a wonderful spring carnival. But Oliver and Williams continue to really stand up on the big stage.
That's
and
a good point.
Especially, well, Oliver's been superb winning a Derby and an Oaks, but Craig Williams winning a Melbourne Cup and then he put on a clinic a little bit there yesterday as well.
And then throwing what Glenn Boss has done in Sydney this spring as well. The three of them have all collected a lot of the big races.
Yeah, it's been great to watch.
turn our attention now to the A-League on the Hall Pass. Gareth Hall with us on the Breakfast Club. Melbourne Victory host Wellington Phoenix on Sunday, 4 p.m. Check your local guides at Amy Park, and Lee Broxham will be salivating at the prospect of getting out there again. He joins us, the champ from the Victory. Good morning, Broxy.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Okay, very well. Thank you, buddy. How are you, more importantly? What are we, 5 rounds in or so? How's the body starting to feel?
Yeah, it's okay, but you know, it's normal. We have a long pre-season, so yeah, playing games is the best at the moment. I guess you know things could be going a little bit better, but yeah, it's, you know, you take it all in your stride, all the knocks and niggles and things like that, because it's yeah, like I said, it's a long pre-season, so you'd rather be in season playing.
The results suggest it's been a very inconsistent start to the season for the Melbourne Victory, and there's been some challenges with personnel and who's been out there and who hasn't, all that sort of stuff. But how do you see things unfolding for your team? How are they going at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, we don't want to make too many excuses. There's been some disruptions, obviously a lot of changes from the previous season as well. So, you know, if things take a little bit more time, then I guess it's only natural. Yeah, I guess you don't want to be using that for too long. You know, we're 4 games in now and an important game on the weekend. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's all sort of a bit cliche and things you say when, you know, you're not in the ideal position. But, you know, the league's close. You know, the teams are very close. So it's, you know, in the league, you're only a few wins away from being right up at the top for the moment. So, you know, it's just we believe in what we're doing, and we're gonna keep at it, and we think it'll bring us success.
Lee, you talk about those changes, obviously with the new coach coming in, and some personnel changes. But what has been the most significant one that's been most difficult for you guys at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of things, I guess. You know, like it's there was a large turnover, I think, of players and of key players as well. You know, you're not just, you know, when you change 50% of your squad from the previous year, it is kind of normal in the league, but, you know, there's a lot of key personnel changes in the playing squad, and then, you know, even backroom staff as well, there was a fair few changes. So it's taken time getting used to how even the head coach wants things done and how different staff operate, and getting used to how new players operate as well. So it's normal, but it's probably something that's taken a little bit more time than would like. Yeah, like I said, we're fully confident in everyone that we've got, and it is a great group of guys, and you know, we all get along really well. So we just feel like it's a matter of time before everything starts, you know, clicking together on the same day, you know, on game day, it'll making sure everything happens. You know, who scored a couple of great. We've been defending well the first few games and not scoring, but you know, we scored a couple of great goals on the weekend, but you know, didn't defend as well as we could have. So yeah, probably just getting everything right on game day as a collective, and we'll be okay.
So does that need to be more player driven rather than coach driven with that, when those changes are implemented?
I suppose a little bit, but I think it's, you know, on game day, it's only, you know, we've been given all the tools all week and or all pre-season by the coach. It does come down to the players to execute what he wants, for sure.
I mean, we're 3 or 4 games into the season now, Lee. Do you get a feeling as to who are the good teams and at this point, or does it still need a little bit more time to settle in because it is such a long season?
I think it's still, you're still doing a little bit more time, I suppose. Teams that have done well the previous year and are winning early on, you start thinking that, you know, they're continuing on and they're going to have a good year. But we've seen in the past some teams start really well and fall away, and some teams, you know, start poorly and get it together and you know, win 10 games on the bounce and are right up there at the end of the year. So, you know, in probably a few more games, you start, you know, start seeing who's going to, who's a difficult team. And after you played a few teams, you start feeling where, you know, who was a difficult team when we played them and what their strengths are and weaknesses are. And you do get, because there is so much changeover, you know, we said we change 50%. A lot of teams change a lot of players each year. You know, I guess that's the salary cap environment. And it's, so it is difficult to feel out teams. And once you've played them, you know, after sort of, you know, 9 rounds, 8 rounds, you start feeling the differences in between the teams.
tomorrow at headquarters for the last day of the Melbourne Cup Carnival at Flemington for Stakes Day. One of the feature events on the card is the VRC Sprint, which was taken out last year by Santa Ana Lane, and hopefully, for my sake, this year by Santa Ana Lane. I reckon Sam Friedman might be hoping for his sake as well, because he's getting the polish on Santa Ana Lane ready for the big one tomorrow. Sammy, good morning.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on. Great to have you on. Now, Santa Ana Lane has become a fan favourite all across the nation with the way that he races and gets into the charger to the line late. Sammy, how are we looking for the big one tomorrow at Flemington, the Daly Sprint Classic?
Yeah, he's in really good shape. He, obviously won the race last year off a fairly ordinary run in the Everest, and you know he's coming into this off a better run. He really suits 3 weeks between his runs, and that's what he gets here. And third up should really suit him. And look, his work during the week's been superb. So touch wood, you know, that not too much rain comes, and the track's playing fair, and he'll be riding it.
I was talking to Dan Lester about this through our Friday form segment before, and the challenge of getting them to peak for such big events. The Everest obviously was pretty keenly sought by the team to get him on the radar and win that. Didn't quite happen, but having to go again in a field like this, which is a quality field, how difficult is it to manage that program for the horse?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've got a great team of staff behind the horse, and we've got a really good grip on the horse, which helps when you're setting him for races. You know when he's at his best, and we always went into the Everest second up with the intention of coming to the VRC Sprint third up. So look, last year we went into the Everest third up, and the VRC Sprint was really, you know, an afterthought. We monitored him closely after the race last year and made sure he was all fine. But this year, if you see him on Saturday, he probably looks even better than he did in the Everest. You know, his coat looks outstanding now, and he's at his full fitness, and it's always hard to get them to peak on the perfect days, but he's a horse that, you know, he's a real grand final horse. He hasn't won first up since he was a 2-year-old, so but we're very happy with him.
And just on the track, it looks like there's going to be a fair bit of rain in the next 12 hours or so. How's that going to affect his chances, do you think?
Yeah, look, he wouldn't want it too heavy. One good thing about Flemington is it drains so well, and it never gets bottomless. So look, he's won a TJ Smith on a soft 7, he won the Stradbroke on a heavy 8, the good one on a soft 7. So I'd say he's more than capable in soft going, but as soon as it tips into that heavy range, it just dulls his finish a little bit, and probably brings some other horses into it.
Sammy, congratulations on the week that you've had, especially on last Saturday taking out the Derby. I want to know how you survive a week like this. Plenty of excitement throughout the 4 days, and then you've got probably your biggest, along with Warning and the Derby, but Santa Ana Lane on the final day. And yeah, I would imagine you would still have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to work the horses.
Yeah, look, you just take it every day as it comes. We're lucky, well, not lucky, but yesterday we didn't have any runners, so you sort of take that day during the week to do the morning and then sort of have a bit of a rest in the afternoon. And I dare say it's probably been a bit more taxing on the Danny O'Brien team, who've probably had to go out celebrating every day. So we're lucky. I'm down at the farm most of the time, so I'm out of the way, and I just tend to go to the races and then head back down there. So but it's nice when you get to the end of the week and hopefully get a nice result tomorrow and then can celebrate it all.
And at the end of the week, there's a good group of young trainers like Benny Hayes, Calvin McAvoy, yourself, Mitchell Friedman. There's a terrific group of young trainers coming through. Do you organise a big party at the end of the week?
If everyone's had a nice week, then we've got a really good group of mates. Jack Turnbull's assistant to Mike Moroney, Ben Gleeson's assistant to Danny O'Brien, and good mates of Dave Eustace and Calvin, obviously. So we all tend to, try and get through the week, and then definitely, tomorrow we'll all share a beer at the end of the day and hopefully enjoy the night.
How has Warning pulled up from the Derby?
He pulled up really well. Yeah, he probably could have backed him up in the McKinnon if we really wanted to. He's he's a very sound horse, a great mover. But we got him straight out to the paddock, and there's offers coming on the table for Hong Kong, etc. But hopefully we get to keep him and we can see him win another Derby in the autumn and hopefully contest it the Melbourne Cup next spring.
Dash Barty, she's an Australian. She'll be a part of the Australian team in the Fed Cup this weekend in Perth at Rack Arena. She was talking about that there. Taking on France. And one man who knows a fair bit about tennis excellence is Darren Kale. Speaking of Ash Barty, he's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Darren.
Hey, good morning, boys. How are you?
We are going really well. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate your time. We know you're pretty busy these days. But the Fed Cup team with Ash Barty leading the charge. And we've never said, I don't think, well, certainly in my time in tennis, that we've had a number one player leading the charge. How exciting is this for Australian tennis?
Well, I think it's incredibly exciting, especially what she's been able to do the last 12 months. And look, I guess most people outside of tennis are a bit surprised by Ash getting to the number one ranking in the world, but most of us inside of tennis, not all that surprised at all. She's an absolute legend of a player and certainly a legend off the court as well, a great young lady. And the fact that she can play so many different styles of game and she's got different weapons to go to if something's not working, she's a hell of a player. So we're really honoured as Aussies to see her as the number one player in the world.
I was thinking during the week when we were talking about her earlier, Darren, that she not only has she got different styles of game, she plays the different formats. She's big into the doubles as well and such a prominent player in that those contests as well. Will we see, do you think, her sort of put that on the back burner a little bit now? She is number one, trying to protect that ranking?
Honestly, I would doubt it. I think she gets so much pleasure playing doubles, and the fact that the doubles game can really benefit the singles game in many, many areas, especially with the way that she plays. As you know, playing doubles as you're coming forward a lot more and spending a lot more time at the net. That's kind of the way she plays anyway. It helps her backhand return a serve. I think when you talk about going out and having a practice session or going out and playing a doubles match, most players would like to go and play a doubles match. And I know even with my time with Simona Halep, we've had a look at the schedule for next year and she's slated to play 8 doubles tournaments next year. So right. I actually think you'll find most of the female players, no matter what their rankings are, will play at least a half a dozen doubles tournaments anyway. So I think she'll get that balance right.
Have you sort of picked up anything that she's done differently, Ash, to sort of go from that player that was inside the top 10 to being the number one player in the world? Because she seems to be closing out matches a little bit better. Is that just through experience, or is it she's done a few different things to make sure that when she gets in those positions, she's actually capitalising?
Well, her mentality is a lot better than it was a couple of years ago, and I think that just comes from playing a lot more and getting a few more wins and having a little more belief in those moments. There were times when she could get pretty down on herself, but she's not doing that at all anymore, and she's certainly staying in a lot more matches. She's really improved her backhand, which at some point was a bit of a weakness when she came over her backhand, but we've known for many, many years she has an incredible slice, that the topspin backhand could be attacked a little bit. And I don't know if you remember seeing the French Open final, but the topspin backhand was probably the weapon of the match, and she did incredibly well. So I think Tyres and her have worked on that particular shot a lot. She's improved her movement around the court. I know she's had some big weapons in the forehand and the serve. The serve's always been one of the best serves in the game, but I think that's also improved. So it's no real surprise to see her doing what she's doing.
Darren, as a tennis coach, especially so with Ash Barty, how do you manage these players not to burn out? Because you have a look at Ash's schedule. She's been here in Australia, she's competing. Yeah. She's been at a lot of promotional events, and then she's headed to China and then back here, and then she's playing again, and then the Australian summer's not far away. How do you make sure that they don't burn out?
Yeah, honestly, if you're talking about someone with an older head on their shoulders, you've got to look straight to Ash. I know she's still a youngster, but it feels like she's much older and wiser than her age will tell you. And I'm actually in Queensland at the moment doing some workshops for Tennis Australia, and this is where she bases herself. And the guys here talk about the fact that when she comes back to Queensland, she throws herself back into the national academies back here in Queensland and hits with all the players and all the young juniors, and especially the females. And she's a part of the leadership group here as well. So she just doesn't come back here and do nothing. She comes back here and sticks herself straight back into the tennis. But she's also realised that she can't run herself into the ground. So quite often when she does arrive back into Australia, the guys here won't see her for a week or so. She won't even pick up a racket. And then she'll get back into it really slowly. So I think that year that she had off from tennis, when she went and played some cricket, she realised how hard she can push herself. You've got to keep the love of the game as the forefront as well. And she's worked out a nice balance of getting enough time off. And when she does get on the work, she works incredibly hard.
The great thing about this Fed Cup team is that Ash can play singles and doubles. But also, Sam Stosur, who's almost become this forgotten player, is part of the setup who can also play singles and doubles. Are we an overwhelming favourite, Darren? Do you expect us to be beating France?
Look, I think we'll win. I don't think we're overwhelming favourites. I think the French team is extremely strong with Cornet. Mladenovic is playing a lot better singles. And, of course, Garcia can beat anyone on any particular day. And I think the surface is a pretty neutral surface. I know the Aussies like playing on the hard court there in Perth, but it's still a pretty neutral surface for all the players. Now, and they've got an incredibly strong doubles team as well. So they took out Romania in the semi-finals, and it came down to the doubles, and it was an incredible match in the final match, and I think it was Mladenovic and Garcia that won it. So, look, I think we're favourites. I would never say that we're overwhelming favourites. And the other fact with the Aussie team, Sam's taken on Renee Stubbs as a coach the last few months, and Sam's form has improved out of sight already, playing with a lot more confidence. And also Isla Tomljanović is playing, so she's playing her first match for Australia, which should be exciting for her.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.